You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or KNE World Network, LLC.
And your girl man save her. Better believe they get on her knees and pray hard, then pray hard. And never look back once the world forgave you. Then do right, then do good. And it's so hard to do right when you do wrong. Wanna turn right, but you turn all the way left.
Henshaw, and welcome. We're glad you're here for a conversation with Dawn Karima. Energetic, exciting, entertaining, and informative.
Welcome. Oh, we are so glad that you've joined us today. I am Dr. Dawn Karima, and I'm so pleased to welcome our guest to the show today. I want to share with you a piece of good news, though, before we do, that we have been awarded the Best Christian Song in the Indie Songwriting Awards. What a treat! Isn't that wonderful? And a lot of fun. And we have a very special treat for us all today. Someone that I really admire and just think the world of, and you will too, is with us today as our guest. Would you please introduce yourself to us?
Yes, thank you for having me today. This is Kelly Berry. I am a citizen of the Apache tribe, Oklahoma, and I'm also Kiowa and Choctaw, and have some great news is that I am a newly minted doctoral fellow at the University of Oklahoma.
Congratulations. I'm so excited to call you doctor. How wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's many years in the making. It took me 3.5 years, but I want to say it took me my whole life to get to this point.
Yes, yes. What a wonderful way to describe it. It is. All of your education, all of your hard work, everything just is just a wonderful, wonderful accomplishment in this moment. So, doctor, I get to call you that. I'm so excited. My Auntie Nita thought the world of you. She did. She thought you were just the best person. And I do too, of course, and I'm so excited. I know she would just love this moment to call you doctor, and it's an honor to call you doctor. So how does that feel, being called doctor and having an alphabet at the end of your name?
Well, it's taking time to get used to. I'm not used to students or colleagues using that. The alphabet after my name, so it's only been 2 months, and ask me in about 5 to 10 years if I'm used to it.
Yes, well, it's well deserved, and you know, it's such a powerful example too. I mean, it's wonderful for our youth to see you and to know that they too can achieve whatever it is that they feel called to achieve. So I want to hand you the mic for just a minute and let you speak directly to our youth. We have a lot of homeschoolers. We have a lot of youth who listen, a lot of our native youth. I would love it if you would speak directly to our young people and encourage them.
Sure, I appreciate that. Well, the best advice I ever received, and this was recently, the advice I received was, no matter what challenges are thrown at you, just find a way to keep going. Because there are times when, during my doctoral writing, that I wanted to give up. There was about 3 weeks left for me writing, and I wanted to give up because I got tired. I got burned out of writing so many pages, and luckily I had mentors, had friends that were encouraging me to keep going. You've got to this point, you just keep going. So I found a way through lack of sleep, through lack of watching TV, lack of going out and, you know, hanging out, to find ways to finish the last 30 pages of my dissertation. So find a way is what, I know it's a cliche, but that really helped me as I found ways.
Mm-hmm. You sure did. You are, yes, a very persistent person. There's several things in what you just said, and I thank you for sharing all that with us, because I think we need to hear that. We need to see, our young people need to see how things are done, right? Like, we don't just sort of appear being called doctor, or just one day you wake up and it's like, hey, you know. And I think we have to tell the truth about our story and about our journey, and you're very transparent with that, and I appreciate it. But I see a couple of things in here I want to ask you about. And the first one is community. Like you mentioned, your mentors. And my granddaddy used to say that there was two ways to learn. You could make mistakes or you could have mentors. You know, and so what does community, especially mentoring, mean to you as you think about your journey?
For me, and as I'm getting older in my age, you know, some people assume that you're too old to have mentors. And I don't see it that way. And, you know, I'm getting up in that age, and I still have, you know, I could call about 15, 20 mentors that I have in the community that will give me advice. And even though I do have those alphabet letters after my name, I don't know everything. And that's what I tell people. Yeah. I only know what I know, but if I don't know, I'm going to reach out to someone that does know, that can give me advice. Even right now in my research, I'm still reaching out to my mentors and friends to ask them, what avenue do I pursue on this? How do I go about this? So community is, me, you're never too old to have a mentor. I'm probably going to be 70 and still have mentors in my life. That's how I see things.
That really speaks to a great quality that you have, and it's a super important quality, and that's humility. You know, when you say you don't know everything, and I think that humility comes before honor. And so humility is a very precious quality to have, because it does leave the door open for answers to questions and solutions to problems and just knowledge that you might not have another way. And so I'm thinking about community, I'm thinking about mentoring, and that's a part of your journey. But I see a resilience and flexibility and persistence in your journey as well. Could you please talk to us about those?
Sure. And I do, whenever I give lectures and teaching, I have personal stories that I bring in from my experiences. And one of my experiences that I really hit on is in my community, sometimes I'm not supposed to be where I'm at. I'm not even supposed to admit it this far. I have a lot of community members that, you know, kind of question why I went on and got my education, because where I'm from, sometimes people say that getting a high school degree is all we need and is all we're supposed to get as Native peoples, and I don't see it that way.
Right.
I pursue educational opportunities as they come, through presentations, through research, through publications, and what I tell young people is, do what you need to do. You know, I've had people tell me all the time that don't do this presentation, don't do this for this person. But if it's going to benefit the community, if it's going to benefit young kids and seeing like role models that that we can get education to Native people, we can get doctors, we can get masters, bachelors, then I'm gonna spread that message that you can go. Do what you need to do. You do what you want to do. If you want to go get a doctorate like I did, I will help you. I will give you advice on how to navigate that process. So I don't listen to naysayers in the community, because that's just going to bring me down. And I'm being honest in this conversation is,
of course,
that I pursued this avenue because I wanted to. That's what my main focus is.
You're a very brave and courageous person, and I see that. Absolutely, you know, because it's wonderful. You said the word, so now I can say it. Do you consider yourself a role model?
I I don't. I will say I'm what's a reluctant role model because, you know, as Native peoples, I was taught we don't put ourselves on pedestals.
Right.
We don't brag about ourselves, but I'm going to show and talk to you about certain leadership avenues that I pursued that I think I have, but as a role model, if people see me as a role model, that's great. But I'm not going to stand up and say, listen to me, I'm a role model, or listen to me, I'm a leader. That's how I was raised as far as the traditional way of the Native culture that I was raised in. But I'm going to get up there and I'm going to speak about my experiences and encourage people to pursue whatever they need to pursue.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I love that perspective because I think that in a tribal situation, you know, everyone's equal in the circle. And so when people are, there's always somebody watching your life. Always.
Yes.
Somebody who's watching your life that can help you. There's somebody watching your life that you can help. And so I like to think of the word inspiration more than I do role model. That maybe it's just that people sometimes need to be able to see someone else do it. And then everyone else will do it or do whatever they're called to do.
I agree. And I've had several colleagues and several students that are, a lot of my friends are doctoral students now. And they're, you know, they expressed to me that through my presentations and seeing what I'm doing is that they see me as inspiration. And I'm flattered, you know, I'm happy that they see that people can go on and, you know, and get a higher education. But like I said before, kind of reluctant on calling myself a role model. Because this just wasn't one of the values that I was raised by. So,
right.
But, you know, I had a student yesterday told me that, Dr. Barry, you're inspiration for me to get my master's, which made me feel good. Made me feel great about where I was and what I'm doing in my space.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you said it, Dr. Barry. That sounds so wonderful. I love it. That's just beautiful. I also think when I listen to you, I just feel that you're doing so many good things and helping so many people just by letting your light shine, you know, in the world. And I wonder if maybe a better perspective, you know, the dominant culture says role models or whatever, but we're of service. My granddaddy said, if you want to be part of this family, you best be pretty or you better be useful. And I think we were all raised with that idea that we were supposed to serve others and be a blessing to others and help others. And, you know, that's what I see in you, that you are serving the community. You're uplifting the people around you. You're educating and you're helping people. And we don't even need a label for that. It's a wonderful life.
I agree. I'm only doing what my mentors did for me.
Mm-hmm.
When they showed me the avenues to proceed, when they wrote letters of support for me, I'm doing that for students and colleagues now. It's reciprocity is what I go by. And why be a gatekeeper when I was shown the knowledge, when I can give that knowledge back to the community?
What a wonderful heart you have. I mean, that is a wonderful thing and so different than other views of academia, right? The idea of the closed canon and academia is sort of this ivory tower that only certain people can have access to, right? And we must look down on them if they don't have the same degrees and things that we have and all. I love your inclusive approach. What do you hope that having that inclusive viewpoint will do for your students?
For me, I'm hoping that it will resonate them to give it back to the community, just like they were taught by either me or other colleagues or friends, and just resonates through the generations to help each other out, be that what we call a good relative, and help each other out, support, no matter what hardships people are going through, make sure you take the time to listen, and make sure you take time to help each other out. Like I said, I learned that early on, how to be a good relative, and traditional way, Dawn, you know that, how to be a good relative, because I see in your work, I see in your work as well.
I think that's everything. I really do. And I think if we read every book in the canon and we're not a good relative, then we're really, to me, we're not educated. We just read a lot of books. And so I think there has to be a wonderful balance between the academics and how we walk in our traditional ways and how we are a good relative and we keep a good mind every day. And I see you doing that. And there's one other quality I noticed when you were talking about your journey in your doctoral work. It was flexibility. And I think we don't talk enough. We talk about resilience. We talk about persistence, but we don't talk enough about flexibility. And for our young people, flexibility might be it. Like you said, find a way. Like maybe the way that everybody else used is not your way, or it's not working for you. So you've got to find a way. Or if you start it this way and realize, oh, I need to go this way in order to achieve my goal, you know, it's not so much that you're given up or that you're quitting or that you're somehow weak or whatever. Flexibility actually can allow you to withstand a lot of storms. So can you talk to us about flexibility? Because sometimes I think we get a one-size-fits-all kind of approach to education, and one size might not fit all.
Sure. So I go back to my days as faculty at a Indian boarding school.
Uh-huh.
Even though I'm in academia right now, I'm still a certified high school social studies teacher. And for me, flexibility was just giving my students the time to talk and just to listen. You know, not interrupt them, just give them the time to listen, because a lot of my students had hardships. A lot of my students had a hard life dealing with stuff, things back on the reservations where they're from. And I found that they just wanted a voice. They wanted time just to speak and talk to somebody and for them to listen, to vent, to talk about, you know, their life, where they came from. And I made, you know, great friends with students in the past just because I took the time and flexible on my schedule to listen to them, to spend the extra 5 to 10 minutes after class listening to them and not just shoot them out the door to the next class. I know there were times when my students were late to the classes and I had to explain why they were late, but it really made a connection by just listening for those extra few minutes.
That is so precious, because I think those are the memories we have of our teachers and instructors too. You know, I cannot tell you what pages on the syllabus my favorite instructors taught on a given day, but I do remember the times when they took the time to explain something to me or to care about something that I was going through or to help me in some way. And I think that's really, really powerful, very powerful. Well, you're doing wonderful work, and I think it is marvelous to be able to call you doctor, not just for calling you doctor, but so that other people around you can see that you have accomplished these goals and they can accomplish their goals as well. But your doctoral research has lasting implications and is very fascinating. So I want to absolutely give you the opportunity to share some of that with us.
Sure. So I play video games. So my research is esports and / video games, and I'm what's called a gamer. I've been playing video games for the past 35 years. And
oh, wow.
Hey, I sometimes hate saying that number because it kind of gives people, man, he's old. Dr. Ben is old.
No, there's no such thing as old. It doesn't exist.
So 35 years as a gamer, and so when it came time to make a decision on the dissertation avenue, my advisor always said, whenever I talked about video games, my ears perked up. Like, I got excited, and so we found a way to put esports in our dissertation, and so we wanted to focus on education because my doctoral program is educational leadership, so we had to find a way for esports to be infused in ed leadership. So we just saw an esports. Well, there's a ton of esports literature out there. Every day someone's come out with something about esports, but we found a way to indigenize it. And so indigenize that by us is infuse indigenous ways of knowing into esports. And the way I did it was I wanted to make sure that I interviewed institutions that had high number of native gamers playing in their esports programs, which were going to lead to how do we use indigenous ways when we're playing. And one of the ways that I really found that one institution is using indigenous ways of knowing is by core values, such as respect, and you mentioned it a while ago, humility, wisdom. So they use what they're on college campus, they're using those core values, they put them into the esports program. So so it was really interesting about how they used the word wisdom in esports. And they talked about teaching the younger gamers about the process of not only playing esports, but how to navigate college. Because you have upperclassmen who know the ways of going to college, how to navigate, and they want to make sure the younger native students stay in school, get the degree, you know, find a path that they want to pursue in college. So they're taking the time to mentor the younger gamers in this program in ways beyond esports, which I found fascinating. That's my research. But I'm also looking at the intersection of esports, 21st century skill sets, and then indigenous ways of knowing what the intersection looks like. How are we preparing our students beyond high school or college? And then also, how are they using their native culture in video games, which is kind of unheard of. It's kind of like the new kid on the block in education. What's the intersection look like? So that's my research right now. So I'll be happy to answer any question about that. I'm pursuing other projects, too, with this. We're going to figure out how to put the language in esports coming up as one of the projects. How do we use the native languages in esports?
This is fascinating to me. Full disclosure, I really haven't played any video games. so this is all wonderful, new knowledge to me. And I'm looking at how this could be used in language preservation, cultural survival. Oh, it's a wonderful opportunity because we're meeting people where they already are, you know, instead of saying, hey, get over here and learn this culture and tradition. They're already there, right? They're already gaming to start with. So, well, let's talk first about the digital aspect. You know, that sometimes there can be a sharp divide between people who believe traditional ways, only traditional ways, and then the people who believe in innovation, like digital or technology ways. What do you think about that?
Well, that's kind of one of the projects I'm pursuing is a lot of people think that video gamers and people who play video games are just playing for fun. That used to be the case because when I was playing my video games in those 35 years, I was just having fun. I wasn't thinking about what I was learning. I wasn't thinking about infusing any traditional ways of knowledge. But as soon as I started writing my dissertation and interviewing students, I really figured out how can we put this indigenous ways known into the digital technology aspects. And so one of the ways what I'm doing right now is I'm using a framework called the Transformational Indigenous Praxis Model by Dr. Cornell Peewee. And it shows you how to decolonize your mindset. And in my case, decolonizing video game developer mindset and showing that in the past, video games with indigenous characters have shown stereotypical attributes, such as all natives shoot bows and arrows. And I've had students in the past play video games with those concepts and ask, well, Dr. Berry, can you shoot a bow and arrow? I cannot shoot a bow and arrow to save my life. But they see that video game and they think it's true, or they see that all natives and such as there's a character in a game called Mortal Kombat called Night Wolf. He's all muscle.
Right, yeah.
And and people ask me, well, Dr. Berry, how come you're not muscled up like Night Wolf is? Aren't Native Americans supposed to be all muscled up? And I'm like, does it look like I'm muscled up? But that was the old concept, the mindset. But now we're having video games that are showing true representation of the indigenous culture, such as a game called Never Alone, where the game developers reached out to one of the tribes in Alaska and gave them a voice to the table and said, how can we make this accurate with your stories and knowledge? So Never Alone is a great game that shows Inupiat culture, you know, and true representation. Another game that we like to refer to as showing true representation is a game coming out called Civilization. The game developer is actually working with the Shawnee tribe of Oklahoma and developing a playable character with Tecumseh. So we're making progress, but, you know, these games that they're developing, you won't see them on shelves like, you know, College Football 25, because you have to look at, are they going to sell or make money? But so you can download these games, but you won't see them at Best Buy or Walmart like the new video games.
I'm really, there's so much in what you're saying that is really intriguing to me, because I wonder, you know, I'm a shell shaker, ordained minister, so you know I'm going to say this at some point. I'm going to say, what about sacred things, sacred knowledge? You know, there's many of our leaders who are concerned about cultural knowledge or traditional ways going into the mainstream or going into spaces that are not traditional spaces. How do you feel about that?
I get your point. But to combat the stereotypical images that we have in video games of Native American peoples, I think it's beneficial on both parts. And I'm not saying you have to show every traditional thing that we do, a whole sacred, but you can give, you know, you can give images, you can give stories and information to the game developers to give them an idea about how to make this truly representational of our culture without showing, you know, sacred objects, sacred stories. You can make, you can add on later and later to these games and characters, but I'm one that says protect our sacred stuff, but I'm also going to say let's give them a little bit of cultural knowledge to the public, to society, that this is who we are truly as a people, and not the stereotypical of everybody rides a horse or everybody shoots a bows and arrows. I think some information can be protected, but let's educate the public.
Balance. I hear a lot of balance in what you're saying, and I wonder if we've been so out of balance with the stereotypes and sort of just missing the accuracy and all, that we do have to overcorrect a little bit in order to get balanced portrayals and nuanced portrayals. And I think we're seeing more of that even in television, right? I mean, there's actually nuanced portrayals of Native people that are accessible now to watch on streaming. And so it makes sense then that video games would also be a space that we can look into those things. When you look...
I agree. It just, you know, video games, if you, like you said a while ago, you're not a gamer. You really never play video games. So this would be a new aspect to see how we're decolonizing mindsets about who we are as a people.
Yes. I thank you for saying that, because I do think that at some point, you know, popular culture and media, social studies, popular culture and media is my bachelor's degree focus. And I do believe popular culture has a real power to change hearts and minds, to educate people that hasn't been tapped into. You know, people keep writing large and very dense academic texts about things, and that's wonderful. Go right ahead. But people, meanwhile, are playing video games. So, or listening to music. And so I think there has to be, we have to be everywhere. You know, wherever people are that need to learn, this is a space that we should then indigenize. How do you feel about that?
I agree. So one of my favorite TV shows is Reservation Dogs.
Yeah.
And I point people to that to say this is how Indian country is in a lot of aspects. So the Indian humor that a lot of my non-Native friends they'll text me and ask me, hey, what does this mean? Because we don't know.
Yeah.
And I explained it, and I said, that's how we talk. I mean, that's how we joke. We find laughter and humor in anything. It's almost like a coping mechanism with us, is that we laugh about anything. And I always tell my friends, if I laugh at you, or if I joke with you or joke on you, that means I like you. If I don't say anything to you, then I don't like you. So it's that Indian humor that I think Reservation Dogs has really exposed the public to who we are in certain aspects of a culture.
Yes. And one of the things I absolutely love about that particular show is that it's not a monolith. Everybody, there's all kinds of people and characters and traits, and people have different feelings about things and behave in different human, very human ways. And so you don't get that stereotype. You don't get, oh yeah, this is how they all are like this. No, these are very real people and wonderful, vital people. And then when people finish Reservation Dogs, after I make them watch it, then I make them watch Rutherford Falls so they can see, you know, Native people with master's degrees and another side of everything. And then after they're done with that, no.
Right. Well, after that, then you can say, go watch Res Ball or Drive Red Me. So that's different aspects of the culture.
Yeah, we'll keep you busy. And I think that's a beautiful place for popular culture to be. You know, you're going to watch something, so here, watch this. That's an accurate and in-depth portrayal of real characters that are being envisioned. Okay, I'm going to ask more questions because this conversation is fabulous, but they're waving at me that I got to pay the bills. So we're going to go to commercial for just a minute, and then we're going to come back and have much more of this conversation, which mainly I'm having because I'm enjoying it so much, and I'm sure all of our friends who listen are enjoying it too. We'll be right back.
Lord, can you come and save her? Better believe they get on their knees and pray hard, they pray hard, and never look back once the world forgave you.
TalkTainmentRadio.com podcast is another way to go for those of you that's on the go. You can now get your favorite programs on most new cell phone technology. Let us work like a DVR and enjoy our podcasts for those shows you can't fit in your busy schedule. The Road to Featured Podcasts. Type in TalkTainmentRadio.com. Go to homepage. Scroll down to Featured Podcast. Click on Play or click on Subscribe for more programs. Or you have the option to download. Podcast is the way to go for you busy folks. The world's greatest radio. TalkTainmentRadio.com. Another reason to come. Another reason to stay. Radio, the way it should be heard.
Hey, I'm Haley Kiyoko, and I know what it's like to struggle with mental health issues. If you have a friend that's going through a tough time, now is the perfect moment to reach out. Learn how to start the conversation at seizetheawkward.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.
Hey, it's me, your cell phone. We need to talk about something. Something serious. I know you love me. I know you like using me wherever you are. But I feel like this isn't working out when you're driving. I know you may think that it's possible to focus both on me and the road, but I just don't feel the same way. I think we should spend time away from each other when you're driving. It's for the best.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Unlike other health concerns, mental illness is not always easy to see.
D-E-P-R.
Mental illness doesn't show up on a scale.
Bipolar?
Sorting out a mental health concern takes professional diagnosis and treatment.
Anxiety. I thought so.
If you or a loved one has a mental health concern, don't go it alone. For 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP. Learn more at samhsa.gov/support.
Meet Norm. He lives with anxiety. But with the help of this latest innovation from Be Normal, he can be normal, just like everyone else. With the swipe of a finger, you can project happiness. confidence. Machismo. Why settle for being real when you can be normal? The Normal Maker. New from Be Normal.
This item doesn't really work because there's no such thing as normal. We're all different. What we like, how our brains work. In fact, 1 in 5 of us live with mental illness. Don't filter who you are. Start by talking to someone you trust. And remember, there is no normal.
We are strong, and we'll get through this together. But these are stressful times. Reach out to someone, connect with your friends, and know that you are not alone. Visit wearebroadcasters.com/hope. Furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
You come and save her. Better believe they get on their knees. They pray hard, they pray hard. And never look back once the world forgave you.
What a wonderful conversation we are having today. And it's all because we have a wonderful guest. Someone that we all can admire and think so highly of. Would you please reintroduce yourself to our friends who are listening?
Kelly Berry, Apache citizen with Kiowa and Choctaw ties. I'm also a newly minted doctoral fellow, along with my wonderful host, Dr. Dawn Karima.
Oh, how great. Dr. Berry, I'm so happy for you. Congratulations. That's wonderful. And I'm really happy for your students. I'm so happy for the people whose lives you are impacting and continue to impact. And I'm happy for me because I get to talk to you about that today. And so, educational sovereignty. Let's talk about that.
So like I said before, I mentioned earlier that I served as faculty at an Indian boarding school, which has been repurposed. Not like the boarding schools, the federal Indian boarding school where we had Kill the Indian, Save the Man. We have repurposed where we're actually, Native Americans are actually dictating the curriculum, dictating what is taught in the classroom. I found it, amazing that because I'm a survivor, my descendant of two boarding school survivors. My great grandparents went to boarding school, and I don't think that 120 years ago that they would have thought that in today's boarding schools that we would have Native teachers teaching Native students.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I don't think they thought that far ahead. I know they probably weren't able to think about that. So I enjoy having culture in the classroom and in the boarding school that I taught at. And I know my fellow teachers are all about having culture in the classroom where we can teach how to make ribbon skirts, where we can teach mm-hmm. the songs to our students. We can teach them etiquette about how to sing hymns and at the drum. So I'm all for educational sovereignty. That's kind of what drew me to teaching at an Indian boarding school.
Right. Wow. Well, there's been a lot of discussion recently about the Indian boarding school experience because President Biden has issued a formal apology from the United States government for those experiences. And I think for a lot of people, they didn't know, right? I think there are a lot of non-Native people who had no idea that this happened and was going on. And so, as you look at boarding schools, as you look at secondary education and all that, what are your feelings on indigenizing those spaces?
I think it's long overdue. Going back to the apology from President Biden,
yeah.
I think it's made positive steps. I think there's more that we can add on to later on, but I think it was a positive first step because, like you said, not everybody knows about boarding schools. And you mentioned that this Saturday I'm actually speaking at a conference in Texas where they didn't have any boarding schools. So all these non-Native teachers that have emailed me said that, hey, we're going to learn about boarding schools for the first time because we don't teach that in the curriculums because we never had boarding schools. So I think it's great that we're, putting out literature on the boarding schools. I think it's great that there's an apology, but I think there's so much more that we can add on to this boarding school as far as knowledge to the community mm-hmm. and as far as healing from those trauma years that we went through, we're still going through.
Mm-hmm. I hope my greatest hope about all of this is that it will bring more grace for the survivors, that people will become more understanding about the impact of that kind of trauma on families and communities and tribes and whole generation lines. And I hope as a result, then we will see more healing for the survivors, for their descendants, for the communities, everyone involved or everyone impacted by these kinds of residential schools and experiences. And then I look at you doing this wonderful work that you're doing, and I wonder, what does educational sovereignty look like to you when it's actually done right?
When it's actually done right. Because I've had in the past a few instances where it wasn't done right.
And I have too.
I'll give a little story about my time. In the past, I was asked to come kind of sit in and watch a fellow teacher talk about the Native culture. And she was non-Native, but she kind of went through the process of talking about the stereotypes. And that we all live in teepees and we all get per caps from the casinos, which I don't get one. My friends do, different tribes, but I don't get a per cap. And so I kind of had to talk to her about how this was kind of detrimental to the culture when you talk about inaccuracies in the culture. So I've kind of tutored her, kind of took her under my wing and showed her how to go about teaching. And I don't say teach the culture. I tell people to tell the students about the culture. Tell them about my culture. Because that's giving intimate voice to the culture when you tell them about us instead of just teaching about us. When you teach about us, it seems like we're this past people in the past. But when you tell them about us, you're actually giving us a voice and perspective about who we are as a culture. So I've seen it done wrong, and I've seen it done right. And when it's done right is when people go beyond the textbooks, when they bring in those oral stories that tribes have, because not all nations wrote down our stories. We have oral stories, and that's very vital to our culture. And I know a lot of people in the community say oral stories don't mean a whole lot, but to us, they are part of who we are for thousands of years. So when people in oral stories and go beyond the textbook and give factual representation, that's when it's done right to me.
Yes, very well said. And I hear what you're saying, because when it's done wrong, it's so glaringly wrong, right? And I'm thinking about things like Halloween or Indigenous People's Day, which is every day, and Native American Heritage Month, which literally is all 12 months, but, you know, on some folks' calendar, they decide that that's the time, or Thanksgiving, right? That's the time when a lot of elementary schools and secondary schools decide, oops, we should talk about Natives. Okay, so when those kinds of calendar dates, syllabus dates happen, how should educators best handle those kinds of moments in their syllabus?
For me, and it's happened recently, is I've actually gotten emails and been contacted by fellow teachers to make sure that what they're doing is right, in the right way. So I've been kind of consulting with colleagues about what you should do and how you should go about this. I've even talked about, in Oklahoma, we have the land run back in the day. And I know some schools have done that recently. And so I've consulted and said, when you do the land run, yes, it's part of Oklahoma history, but you're actually doing a disservice. You're discriminating against the Native culture, because that was when our land was taken away from us. By people reaching out, that's the good way. That's the right way to do things. Is make sure you have correct information. If you're unsure about how to go about this in your syllabus or how to go about certain events during Native American Heritage Month, reach out to experts. Reach out to the tribe, the community, and we'll be happy to help you out.
I appreciate you saying that, because I think for so long folks either thought, oh, what they were doing was perfectly fine, or they had a little bit of ambivalence about reaching out, because this is that time of the year when I get a lot of those same kind of emails. Like, literally, they start with, is this racist? You know, things like that. And so I always applaud them on some level for at least reaching out, at least trying to get a correct perspective on these things. And so I think what you're saying is so helpful, because this is how we save the next generation from some of the Thanksgiving plays and, you know, the terrible Halloween costumes and just some of the misrepresentation that all of us can remember. We are talking about so many wonderful things, but I want to make sure that if there's something that we don't know about you that we should already know, or you would like for us to know, that we do take a minute to touch on that.
Honestly, you kind of mentioned in everything that I'm about. I mean, I'm an educator, an indigenous educator, but I'm not a gatekeeper. And I mentioned that before, is I want to spread the knowledge out to my colleagues, to students, about who we are as a people, our contributions to history, and how we go about our daily lives in a traditional way. So you've kind of already hit on everything that I post on Facebook or on, I don't have Instagram, but mainly Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we're talking about those things, I hope that you'll be able to shed some light on something that I've heard a lot lately. It's almost, I've been hearing a lot from people who are pursuing advanced education or having to go away from their home communities about how lonely an educational journey can be. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, because my first two years of college, I went and played college baseball at a small college in New Mexico. And I think I was only one of two natives on campus. That's how small the population. And I went away from Oklahoma. I went away from my ceremonies, friends, the Indian humor. But I actually found allies on campus that through faculty and through staff that made me feel comfortable to be on campus. We didn't have any Native events or anything like that, but they really took care of me. They really became my aunties, my uncles, my grandpa and grandmas on campus. So it's about finding people that, support you in what you're doing and understand that you're away from home. And like I said, I found a lot of allies through my journey that have helped me even today. I met an ally, this weekend at the National Congress of American Indian Conference I was at, and really, really connected. So we're going to be working on a book chapter together. So that's how I found support. So that's how I found support when I was very lonely as far as not being part of my tribal community.
I think sometimes we have to talk about these tough issues because otherwise they intimidate people, right? And people don't want to leave home, and so they just don't try. They, I don't want to go. I don't want to go there. I don't want to leave home. Or they leave, and then it's like, wow, this is really hard. And so when we share strategies, we share insights into how to make it a little bit easier and maybe more enjoyable. I think that's the real work right there. You know, we can help you fill out your application and we can cheer you on. Yes, you should go. But in those moments where, okay, now what? what do I do now? Right? And then I'm hearing people also who feel that there is a disconnect. Like as they pursue higher education, they don't want to become farther away from their traditions emotionally, spiritually, mentally. What do you think about that?
I understand their point of view. And where I'm at right now at the University of Oklahoma, we have a high population of Native students and organizations. But when I came here to OU as an undergrad many years ago, that was the first time and I actually went into the sweat, and I actually sweat for the first time, and it really gave me appreciation of the support that we have on campus. And I understand that, you know, when you go away from home, you feel disconnected, but I was always, you know, practicing what I was taught traditionally on my own, where through prayer or through, you know, smudging or cedaring, because I was taught that. I always kept that with me when I went to this college. And when I came back, it's like I never left. So I was able to maintain what I was, the teachings that my grandpa and my uncles taught me to take out there to get me through those 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Yes. When you think about this educational journey, what does the future look like to you, for you?
For me, I'm always going to be in the classroom. I love teaching in the classroom. Research is great. Have fun researching. But probably in 20, 25 years, you're going to still see me in the classroom teaching at some level, whether it's high school or middle school, college, or I've even taught elders in the past. So I might be teaching elders computer classes again, because I taught elder computer classes in the past for a tribe. I was teaching 70-year-olds to 85-year-olds, which was a challenge because, you know, elders can be honoring, but I'm going to be in the classroom somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And what does the classroom of the future look like? You know, there's been all of these predictions throughout popular culture of, you know, we'll all be having rocket ships and, you know, AI and all of that. But what do you think the classroom of the future looks like?
It's going to be a blend of AI with traditional teachings. So I'm actually, in probably about a month, I'm going to be working with a colleague or a couple of colleagues on creating an AI, kind of a video game where we can take a trip into the past and see where certain tribes were living in a certain past, how a village looked 3,000 years ago. My friend's working on that. He showed me a piece of it, is how a tribe in Alaska was living 3,000 years ago. So it's going to be technology savvy in the classroom. And I know a lot of teachers are kind of hesitant about bringing technology to the classroom. But to me, that's the whole wave of the future, is infusing technology with your traditional teachings and see where the intersection happens.
Yes, I could see that. When you look at your legacy, your life, you know, in the classroom, everywhere that you are, what do you want people to remember and to say about you long, long time from now?
So let's say 75 to 100 years from now.
Yeah.
From that, Dr. Berry was effective in his teaching, and that he took the time to listen. He didn't stand up and lecture the whole hour. He took the time to listen to us, and that's what I want people to say about me, is he took the time to listen.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you're an excellent listener, and one of the things about you is you're a wonderful listener, but then you are a wonderful taker of action, that you listen and you care and you implement what you hear and what you learn into a better educational experience for everyone around you. And that's a superpower, I think. That's wonderful.
That's funny you say that, because one of my beaded medallions is Superman logo. So I wear that when I present, and I'll send you a picture of it later on. But, yeah, I have a Superman beaded cut bead medallion that I wear for presentation.
Oh, I love it. That's wonderful. That is. I mean, we're all superheroes. We really are. And we have to be. These times that we are in, every one of us has to use our gifts and our talents and our abilities to help every one of us, all of us, together. And you are doing that so wonderfully well. I am curious, though, if you had the opportunity to design a video game, what would your ideal video game be like?
So I've kind of became interested, because I've been presenting on the East Coast and getting to know those tribes on the East Coast of the United States. And so one of the games that I actually got to play that I've never played before was lacrosse. So lacrosse is actually, according to the Haudenosaunee, the Iroquois, that's the creator's game. So I would make a game that honors the Haudenosaunee voice in a lacrosse game and design a game in that manner.
That's a great idea. That is a wonderful idea. And how would you know when you were victorious or successful in that game? Like, people talk about beat the game or something like that. How would you? How would a game like that, how would you win?
So my winning would probably be different than a lot of people's. I know, like, scoring goals and would be the concept of the game. But for me, the win-win for me would just to show the audience that incorporating the Haudenosaunee voice into the game through storytelling, through the history, that would be the win for me.
That is. Absolutely. That's wonderful. Well, how can folks connect with you, perhaps take some of your classes or have you come and present to them or be part of what they are doing in educational sovereignty?
Just by reaching out through email. Do you want me to send my email to you to present, or do you want me to just say it on air?
Yeah, just say it. We have friends in 160 countries, all 50 states in the United States. Somebody's having a conference somewhere, and they need you.
just to reiterate, my research is esports and video games, and I do talk about the histories of Indian boarding schools. So if that is the place that you would like me to talk about, here's my email. It's Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y, dot D's and dog, dot Berry, B-E-R-R-Y, dash one, at OU.edu.
Okay, we need that one more time.
Sure. So when I get to that dash one, it's the number one. It's the actual number one. So it's Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y, dot D, as in dog, dot Berry, B-E-R-R-Y, dash one, at OU.edu.
Perfect. This is a truly dynamic educator. And if you have a conference, if you're looking for someone to write for your anthology, if you're looking for any kind of educational speaker, this is the best. So we hope that your inbox will fill up with invitations. But I know this, Dr. Berry, you have already distinguished yourself in so many ways and accolades and accomplishments. And I know and believe and trust that you will do many more great things and you will succeed in them all. And I'm really thankful that you joined us today.
I had fun. I had a blast. And have you back. I'll enjoy it too.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm already looking forward to the next time I get to have a conversation with you. And I know our friends who listen are too. Thank you to all of you who make this possible, these conversations. This is a labor of love. We almost have a miracle every month to just be able to stay on the air. And it is amazing how many of you, our sponsors, our donors, our friends who listen, our guests, our platforms, are so kind to us. And I don't take that lightly. It's much appreciated. My name is Dr. Dawn Karima, and I'm so glad we had this beautiful conversation, and I can't wait till all of us are all together again next time. I'll see you then.
Come and save her. Better believe they get on their knees and pray hard. They pray hard and never look back. What the world forgave you.
Yeah, oh Lord, can you come and save her? Better believe it, get on the knees and pray hard. Then pray hard and never look back once the war forgets.
You've got the power. The world's greatest radio. TalkTainmentRadio.com.